Everybody knows the acclaim that McLaughlin and Carrigan have on the program through their night serum. It's an incredible opportunity that we have tonight. Thank you very much to them for giving their time to give us an opportunity to hear from them. The format is going to follow basically, if you were at the last question and answer session in the basement, just the same thing. The questions are predetermined already. And I guess it'll be 10 minutes or so per answer, as you like. And hope everybody enjoys. First question. Given that obviously there's a wide array of mitzvot in the 113 mitzvot in the Torah, ben adam lechaver, ben adam lemakom, there's a lot to choose from, a lot that could probably make a person be considered a good person if he would do them correctly. Why is Talmud Torah the most essential mitzvah in Judaism?
It's yours.
Go ahead.
Do it.
So I'm the setup man.
Right.
I'll tell you what, you know, in our circles, we don't study that much Kabbalah. It's unfortunate that people in our world, in our yeshivas, because we're so rational, is sometimes people are very disparaging of Kabbalah. And Kabbalah is a different world, and you could barely find one of the Rishonim outside of the Rambam who wasn't the Mekubal, one of the Rishonim that we accept as authoritative. And today we don't really study Kabbalah, and we focus on Gemara and Halacha, what's called the world of Nigla, not so much Nistar. I'm sure Blachman would disagree, a bit of a Hasidish bent, so there's much more of Kabbalah Hasidus. But I'll tell you two statements from the Zohar that even people that aren't Mekubalim know about Talmud Torah. And that will be an answer to your question. So you can walk away from tonight, not just with an answer to your question, but a little bit more of a mekubal. Okay? One statement in the Zohar is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'yareis Echad Hu, which is a very, very short way of saying that millions of Jews throughout thousands of generations have died defending the belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't be understood by the human mind. That's the basics of what's called monotheism. That's what we've established. That's our message to the world. That's why we're hated. That's why they're barging through the gates in Kerem Shalom. There's a terrorist attack last night because we stand for something. That's what Rabbi Kiva died for. And that's what the Shas was burned for. We talked about the Shas being burnt in Paris, 1242, the Marie Ruttenberg saw it. Because we bear a message that you can't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And any attempt to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu is paganism. Any attempt to make him more human, any attempt to think of him in physical terms. I didn't want to tell you this Zohar, but I'll tell you another Zohar. The Lashon of the Zohar is less machshava de tfisa beklal. Less machshava, there's no human intellect that can chapa kodesh baruch hu. So if you take the first Zohar, less machshava de tfisa beklal, you can't understand kodesh baruch hu. And that's our message. How do you know that kodesh baruch hu that you're davening to, that you're performing mitzvahs, that you're trying to love, that you're trying to be afraid of? How do you know they're bonus shalom? You can't imagine, if I ask you to tell me a word to describe kodesh baruch hu and you answer that question, you're a kofir. Unless you say the word not. Because that's the only word you could say from your human vernacular that can apply to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if you can't explain HaKadosh Baruch Hu in human terms, what's the closest you can do and come? Try to understand His will. If I told you there's this great rabbi, you're not going to meet on the color, Rabbi Blachman, he's an incredible teacher, he's an incredible Talmud Chacham, he's not going to be here the whole summer, you'll maybe meet him the last day of the summer. So some of you will say, well, I want to get to know him. Let me look at the svarim he uses. Let me taste the cake that he bakes, if he's a baker or a cook. But if you really wanted to get to know him, you could submit 200 questions to him and study his answers. If you really wanted to know him, you could submit 2,000 questions and study those answers. You could submit 200,000 questions, or 2 million questions, or 200 trillion questions. And the Torah is like submitting 500 trillion times 500 trillion questions at Kodesh Baruch Hu about what he thinks about every aspect of human experience. So, less machshava de tfisa beklal, you can't understand Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yareisa chad hu. Hashem and the Torah are more or less one. They're not really one because the Torah is Hashem's will, but it's as close as we can get to approximating HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah is a reflection of his Ratzon, here's the third Zohar. Histakel v'yareisa ubara alma. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked into the Torah and employ that as the blueprints to create our world. So Rav Moshe Feinstein knew more about HaKadosh Baruch Hu than Albert Einstein, because he was studying HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, directly revealed, not just looking at the world Hashem created, or tasting Hashem's cake, or tasting Hashem's creation. And that's why even the most strongly committed person who believes in studying math and science, what's called in today's world Torah Amada, has to believe that you can get it all from Torah if you just knew Torah well enough. Because Torah is the blueprints of our world. And every part of this world, every part of our cosmos, every part of our universe can be found in Torah. So those are the three Zohars. Number one, you can't understand Hashem. Number two, the closest you can come to understanding Hashem is His will. Number three, who is used to create our world. So if you don't study Torah, the entire world of Avodas Hashem is empty. Because who are you worshipping? In another hour, you're going to say, what image do you have in your mind? Wait a second, if you have an image, you're a kofer. You're not allowed to have an image. So that's why Torah is so central. Because without Torah, as the Rambam calls in Hilchos Kriyas Shema, so Rav Lachman was opening a Rambam, where the Rambam describes Talmud Torah, which is located in the first section of Kriyas Shema, not in the second section of mitzvahs. Second section of Kriyas Shema is the section of mitzvahs, Vayim Shemoah. The first section of Kriyas Shema is pure emunah, ahavas Hashem, yiras Hashem, relating to Kriyas Shebrichu. But yet Talmud Torah is found in the first section, not the second section. Yishinatam Levanacha V'dibarta Bam, because the Rambam says the first section has Yichud Hashem, you need to believe in Yichud Hashem. Ahavas Hashem, you have to love the Rabbanu Shalom. V'talmudo, the Rambam calls Talmud Torah, Shehu Ha'ikar Hagadol Shakol Talibo. It's the Ikar Hagadol. Without that, so if you learn Torah and you don't want to perform a mitzvah, that's called perverted Torah. Does anyone know what's that called? Torah without interest in performing a mitzvah? Shalom Amanas Lasos. And if you perform Torah without any interest in performing a mitzvah, what's that called? Torah Shalom Lishma. You're not even yotzei the mitzvah of Talmud Torah because you've perverted Talmud Torah. But there will come a time in your life, maybe in 80 years, maybe in 100 years, certainly in 120 years, in which none of you will have any mitzvahs left to perform. No sukkah, no lulav, no matzah, no tefillin, no tzitzis, no Shabbos, no isurim. In the olam ha'emes, in the next world, there's no mitzvahs. Nasa chashim in ha'mitzvahs. There's no mitzvahs. The only thing you'll have from this world, in that world, the only thing, certainly nothing material, no slushies, no yummies, the only thing even spiritual you'll have in the next world is Torah. I'll leave you with two final gemaras. Rav Ashi was walking in the market once, and the Malach HaMavis came to see him. And he said, it's your time, come, I've come to collect the Shemayim. And Rav Ashi says, give me another month. Why do you need another month, the Malach HaMavis says? Rav Ashi says, because I have to chazer my Torah. Why do you have to chazer your Torah? Because Rav Ashi said, when you come to Shemayim, you walk through the Shari Shemayim, you know what they announce? Ashrei Misha Balakan B'Talmud HaBiyado. You're not going to bring anything to Shemayim. I've never seen a hearse hauling a U-Haul. You never see a U-Haul in the back of a hearse with a little person's collections and furnishings and sports memorabilia. Doesn't come with you. The only thing you take with you to Shemayim that you continue to experience in Shemayim is your Torah, because it's the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So think about those three Zohars. Les Machshava D'Tvisa Beklal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Araisa Chadhu, Histakel b'araisa ubara alma, and think about that Gemara in Moed Katan, and it also appears in Bava Basra, and you'll know why we study so much Torah. Everyone has to study Torah. You can't be an Orthodox male if you don't study Torah. You can be an Orthodox female if you don't study Torah. You can be an Orthodox male maybe in the last generation who didn't have a yeshiva background, whose parents were survivors of the Holocaust, who didn't have the chance to be exposed to Torah, who has an excuse for not learning Torah. But you can't. Would you call yourself Orthodox if you kept every mitzvah but Shabbos or every mitzvah but Tefillin? You have to accept every mitzvah. How much Torah you have to learn? Gemara says clearly, some learn more, some learn less. Echad amarba, echad amamit, uvelvad shichav en libo l'shamayim. Some learn a lot, some learn a little. That's already a different story. Without Talmud Torah, the core of your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is empty, because as much as you want to try to envision Ribbono Shel Olam, you're bordering on paganism, you're bordering on Avodah Zarah if you try to make Hashem too human. So Hashem is removed, Hashem is beyond, Hashem is Kadosh. You can't understand Him. Closest we can come. The black man.
Thank you. You said it all. don't mind, I'll just be the rationalist. I'll leave you with these ORs. I'd like to, first of all, contest the formulation of the question. Let's start with that. There is some kind of a notion that religion's purpose is to basically fill the voids, the emotional, psychological voids found in man's psyche and his emotional system. Religion is there to serve you, make you better, right? Make you feel good, right? Kumbaya. Marx thought so too. That's why he called the opiate of the masses. I got news for you guys. The world was not created for you. Or you. Or you. Why God created the world? God knows, and I mean it. Because I don't. And anybody who says he does is either ignorant or a fool. We know he wanted the world, we only know his purpose. We don't know why it's important. We don't know how exactly we do things that lead to that purpose. But he tells us to facilitate that purpose, we have to do X amount of activities. And he calls the priorities. So your question should have been, can we somehow give meaning to the fact that God prioritizes Limud HaTorah over other mitzvot which he demands from us? I don't think we look for mitzvot to give us good feelings or anything. It would be enough to say, I buy flowers to my wife on Fridays. And I think buying flowers is idiotic. I'd rather invest in a book. Then I could read it too. Somehow, after 2-3 days, this stuff withers. Yet I buy flowers, and I'm a rational human being. And the answer is because she smiles. And I want that smile. That's why I buy the flowers. Ask me why I learn Gemara, or why I learn anything. I do anything honestly at the simplest base level. I want them smiles. Okay, the simplest base level, okay? What forces me or pushes me to follow my religion? Well, we talked about it in class yesterday. Whatever it is not the place over here. I know one thing. Questions of religion, we do not ask what it gives to us. We ask what does God want. So that's the first part of this. I really think that what we should be looking for is that. And so, why is this an essential mitzvah? Honestly, why do tefillin have to be black and square? I prefer orange and oval. Why is he obsessed with the number 39 or other numbers like 7? I don't know. Ask God when you meet him. That's as far as the formulation of the question is concerned. Yet the Rambam does say in Hilchos Me'ilah, the 8th Perek, that we are commanded to somehow make sense of the mitzvot as much as we humanly can. Rabbi himself saying, don't think you're going to get to the bottom of it, but it's still a worthwhile activity, for there's no question that there's wisdom in the mitzvot, which even the local non-Jewish neighbor can comprehend, as the pasuk says, that the goyim around us will say, "Am chacham menavon hagoya gadol azeh shelo chukim u'mishpatim tzadikim." Ramban concurs with this. Actually, last week's parsha. So we do have to try to find reason. I guess the real reason is for us to connect to them, making it easier for us to do it. So the question probably should have been: is there any way we can connect to this prioritizing of mitzvot Talmud Torah that God has given us through his Torah Shemiksav and Baal Peh? And then I will answer. I actually do agree with everything Rabbi Kerrigan said. I thank you, everything was beautiful. But if you don't mind, I'm going to try to speak it without the Kabbalistic undertones. Okay? We are commanded to know God, to love God. Knowledge of God, the Sifri writes in Parshas Va'eschanan on the Pasuk Va'aftos Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol me'odecha. The Sifri writes, Eini yode al eizet tzad ohavim oto. How am I supposed to love some abstract idea? What are you going to love? You can't actually put up a pin-up. What are you going to love? What are you going to be drawn to? And the Sifri writes, you will learn his mitzvos v'ata makir mi she'omar v'hayaha olam. The lesson of the Sifri is, then you will somehow be introduced not to the God of philosophy, not the God of abstract thought which is beyond comprehension, but you will finally meet the God of creation. That's the Sifri. The Rambam formulates this halacha basically by saying that you should study sciences. Look at his creation. Look at Misha Marvaya Olam. Look at the beauty and the knowledge of everything around you. Look at rock formations. Look at water. Look at anything. Personally, my best hachana for Elul is spending 3 days in Kruger Park in the game reserve. Look at the complexity of nature. I mean, it's cool. I mean, when's the last time you saw 60 elephant stampeding lions because they ate one of their cousins? I mean, it's really a sucky. I have a video on that last year. You know, I took it. I don't mean YouTube. Rambam sends this actually to nature. He sends this to Mada. Yet the Rambam himself writes in Mer Nevuchim, the third volume, I think it's the 51st chapter, that the only way you're going to know who this God is that created the world, what he called Shem HaMeforosh, the essential God who expressed himself in creation. What are you going to love? What's he about? Who is he? Not just what he did. Then you must learn Torah specifically. He does not talk about his emotional or value system. He talks about learning through Torah, actually, who he is as Yichud Hashem. He's a one God, omnipotent, nobody, as Rabbi Terragin mentioned. So it's interesting that Rambam seems to be saying that learning Torah is there not for knowing the personality of God, but more so to know the essence of what as much as you can understand. What God is. Is he one? Is he two? Does he have a nose? Does he have a hand? Rambam himself, interestingly enough, does not mention the idea of the psychological profile of God, of his interactions and his values. Yet there's no question that what Rav Moshe said is 100% correct. No question that if we are to be close to anybody, then we must somehow merge our value systems. If you love anybody, and you will love somebody, what will be happening is, and you'll feel it, that your personalities will merge. You'll keep your own face, but somehow you'll identify with each other. That's what real love is. That's the love that stays after you're 18, after you're 30, and even after you're 60. I'm there. Yeah, and that probably stays forever, hopefully. It's the merging of personalities. It's not enough to know who you are, but to understand your values in order to merge with you as one. So one would say, yes, we learn Torah to figure out his value system. There's a mitzvah, it's a pasuk in Chumash. The Ramban brings this in Parshas B'Shalach, brings the Ibn Ezra, the pasuk Va'azanto lim mitzvosof. Rabban says, what does lim mitzvot mean? Why not razanta mitzvot? Rabban says, it's not enough to read the Torah. You got to figure out the music behind it. What does it really want? What's his value system? What does he want? Does he just want you to keep the law and know Hilchos Sanhedrin, or does he want you to understand his persona, his value system, therefore do lifnim mishurat adin? Does he just want you to be legalistically correct, or does he want to be straightforward and honest? I love telling you a story. I was Zaycha at the Rosh Hashiva in Chicago when I was a boy. It was Rabban Soloveitchik, Zaycha Tzadik Livracha. I mean, that's when I came back from Israel. I went to visit him, and I was sitting by Rabban, and I mentioned to Rabban that a certain person, oh, he's very frum, very meticulous in his observance. Rabban got all red in the face. If you knew, Rabban was a very emotional person. And he said it in Yiddish, I'll translate it in English, Der Galach soll sein frum. Let the local pastor be frum. A Jew has to be honest and straightforward. But Rabban was saying, we take the Torah to understand not just its laws, but its values. But the only way you'll be able to do it is a thorough knowledge of the mass of material. And I don't mean 10 blot with a few Rebbe Kivegas and Baba Kama. A thorough knowledge of the material, period. And I mean Bavli Yerushalmi Sifra Sifri Mechilta. That's the name of the game. Number two, a serious understanding of what you're reading, conceptualizing it, understanding the legal thinking, ultimately the philosophical underpinnings, finally the meta-halachic principles. And then you'll finally know what he really wants. You know, some people tell me, good morning, Rabbi, how are you? And ask him, do you really want to know who I am? No. Should I tell you about my arthritis? No. So why'd you ask me how I am? The answer is people say thing, it means something else. How are you means acknowledge my existence. And when I say Baruch Hashem, means acknowledge mine too. God is not really part of it. Well, here we really want to know what he means. God says, do this, don't do that. What does he really mean? We want to know that. And that's why we learn Torah. We want to get close to God. We want to really merge into his mind. We want to know who he is. We want to merge into his mind. That's probably one way of understanding why God prioritized Limud HaTorah. Okay, thank you, Rabbi Bergen, for your... Next question. You do it, I love it. Give me food for thought, don't you understand? Give me time to think. You kid, be just an old man.
Okay, given that Gemara is taught in the current system of education, Gemara is taught and encouraged before one has completed more basic texts.
I have a lot to say, so do you. Because I'm not the principles. You know what I mean? I tried carefully. You with me?
I'm going first?
Well, I didn't even finish yet. Given that Gemara is taught and encouraged to be learned before one has completed more basic texts of Tanakh and Mishnayos, should one prioritize these more fundamental texts over Gemara in his own learning time?
Oh. He played it safe. Go take it. You said in his own learning time. You just got us off the hook.
Take it.
The answer is no. Absolutely not. You should learn as much Gemara as you possibly can. In volumes. Even with your own time, you should learn as much Gemara as possible. Next question, or Blachman cannot come.
I don't think I'm going to go better than that. Give it to me. Watch. You expect me to argue with this? I get paid for this. Oh, goodness.
Elaborate on that. The one.
No, obviously, I'm going to try to explain maybe background to understand what Rav Moshe is saying, because he actually is right. But, so my job is now is to be the Pirush Rashi over the Gemara here. Yeah, there was once a bookseller in Warsaw which was selling literature in Yiddish. So he translated Shakespeare in Yiddish, and he wrote in order to sell the book, Shakespeare translated in Yiddish and embellished. You understand how embellished you can be. Now he's expecting me to embellish that.
I'm confident.
Oh, give me a break.
Okay, here it goes. Okay, let's have some fun. There is no question in anybody's mind that we are mukhlif to no kala tera kula. Period. And I ain't joking when I said it. That wasn't a laundry list or something you'd go to the store with. I meant it. Read Rambam, Mikra, Mishnah, Halachos, etc. There's also no question in anybody's mind that true learning really demands command of the massive material. No question about that. What is the normal way in which Torah was supposed to have been learned? Well, Rambam writes, based on the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, that in the beginning of your learning, you're supposed to divide your day in three, Shlish b'Mikra, Shlish b'Mishnah, and Shlish b'Gemara. And he explains. Mikra obviously means the scriptures, the 24 books, the way we know them. Know them. Just know the material. Have you met Yeshayahu lately? I mean, how many rabbis, you know, can't finish a pasuk correctly? Honestly, when I was your age, my father made sure I learned the perek a day. I was at a wedding of a relative of Rav Moshe with a kallah made a siyum on Chav Dalet Zvor. Remember? I mean, yeah, you should know Tanakh. You should. Shlish b'Mishnah, which basically means, according to Rambam, the halachos psukos, basically the formulated halach, which is constitute the basis of Torah Shebaal Peh, the Pirush HaMakubal Misinai that Moses received, plus the added extrapolations through the generations. And that's the core material, and Gemara he perceives as lahavinu lahaskil, to extrapolate, to conceptualize, to understand how these ideas are found in the psukim, how we can formulate them, how we can define them in order to extrapolate. Yes, that's Gemara. What we call Iyun, that's Gemara. Isn't Gemara great? It asks all the right questions. My kamash v'lam, pshita, my time up. That's all I've been asking all my life. Minolon. My kamash v'lon, pshita, my taima. Ask that. That's what Gemara is. Asking the basic questions of intelligence in order to understand and to extrapolate. So we really should have been doing this that way. Something happened in history. And this goes back a long time ago. It goes back to a interesting Rashi. In Brachas Chav Ches, and the Gemara says, "Min ubdei chemine higayon." Keep your children far away from higayon. Now, normally, higayon should mean philosophy, which was his mother Shonim do say so. Rashi has an interesting comment, and he says it actually means learning mikra. Mishum Demashke draws people equals you start learning it, it draws you away from your priorities. You should be dividing it. Normally, and Nikra is just great to learn, you give up on the Mishnah, you give up the Gemara. That's one Pirushit Rashi. Reb Chaim of Elazhin in his Hanhagos and Keser Reish actually accepts that Pirush and says we have to be very careful when we learn our Nach to make sure we don't go overboard because we have a certain Shir. Historically, something happened, as we see from the Bali HaTosfos, that people somehow stopped focusing on Mishnah and stopped focusing on Gemara, on the Tanakh. I do not know why. I highly doubt it because of that Rashi that I just mentioned. I do not know why. Honestly, I can hypothesize, but what would that be worth? I do not really know what changed in Judaism. Something must have changed, and somehow because of that, people were studying only Gemara. Rabbeinu Tam is bothered by the halacha that we're supposed to during Shlish B'Mikra, Shlish B'Mishnah, Shlish B'Gemara, and he comes up with an answer which one would call apologetic thinking. You do it by learning Gemara, there's Psukim there, there's Mishnayish there, so somehow we get it together. not to tell it to you, but before Rabbeinu Tam, there was also the Gemara itself, the Babli itself said Shlishma Mikra, Shlishma Mishna, Shlishma Gemara. So the Babli doesn't exactly argue, agree with Rabbeinu Tam. So it's apologetic thinking, which I understand. But now that's the reality. I don't know why, but this is the reality. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of Jewish tradition. Rambam himself writes that when we finally know our Mishnah and our Tanakh and our Gemara, then we just review them, not to forget them, but spend all our lives learning Gemara. Rambam himself says the primary focus of your learning should be Gemara, but obviously you cannot live without knowing the core material. Thus, I am going to differ with Moshe, not in what he's stressing as a value, but practically. Yes, I do think that it is very important. Very, very important. I can talk about my own children. I mean, brother dear, I've tested them in Tanakh and I tested them in Mishnais. Yeah, very much. And I'm sure Moshe does the same with his. I think it is very important. Practically speaking, we should, you got to roll through Tanakh. And you have to know your Mishnais. And believe me, there's 24 hours in a day. And Sundays, Talmud Torah is not an Issur D'oraisa. It's not like Chametz and Pesach. You don't have to burn it. I do think your Moshe is right. Your focus should be Gemara. Because the Rambam writes at the Ikar Lima D'Adam. Historically, it seemed to be that Rabbi Seinu HaRishonim decided and made that call. And I repeat again, I do not really know the truth of why. But that does not exempt us from becoming knowledgeable Jews. Doesn't allow us to be Amei Haaretz. Therefore, yes, I will say that practically you should spend time, make yourself an orderly situation of when, how much, of Mishnah and Tanakh and know it. I'm very proud. I have a certain woman student, which is a Bucky in Tyrus. I could always tell it to my own sons. No, what's with the Bechina? And you say, Shaloi Asani Isha, she should be saying, Shaloi Asani you. So I do think, yes, we have to know Mishnah, we have to know Tanakh, and we should. It's God's wisdom. It's God's Torah. It's the Musar of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Nevuah Shehutzer Chaladoros Nichtava, which Nevuah was written for posterity. So Rashi explains in Megillah, what is Hutzer Chaladoros? For Musar. So you think you have to learn Mesiyos Yesharim, I suggest you learn Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu, and you'll hear all about social values, ethics, how people are from, but they are not good. Read them. Important books. Best sellers, actually. So yes, your Moshe is right. Your focus should be Gemara. And the more Gemara, the better, because it will teach you everything. Teach you how to think. It'll make you intellectually honest. It'll make you thorough. You will know the Havanas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But you know, without the Mass, you will say such weird ideas, which become meaningless. Hakol Tzorech L'mor Dechita, everybody needs the person that's walking around carrying the bag of wheat. You can't take an empty bag of wheat to the mill, there will be nothing to grind. So find your balance. I guess we're going to leave that to the people who lead you in life in your curriculum of how to find that balance. The stress of Gemara that Ramosha said is 100% correct. I do think that there are 24 hours in a day, for goodness sakes. Did you hear about that? And there are 365 days in the solar year. Would you believe that? It means a midwinter break is not, you know, put them in our mitzvahs. How many hours do you sleep? 6, 8. I'm trying to figure out what your age, you know what I mean? When you get to my age, it's 4. Okay? 8. Okay. How long do you daven? You don't exactly daven 3 hours chakras. Right? I want to think. Come on. You're rolling out. Okay? X amount of time for davening, X amount of time for going to school, horsing around, playing baseball, surfing takes 40 minutes a day, hopefully not more. make sure you do a kosher one. And make sure you get a mommy net over there that makes sure that you don't do anything stupid. But there's plenty of time. Time is not your enemy. You're not supposed to kill it. When your friends tell you, let's go kill some time, go to the pizza parlor, you tell them, I love time. Why would I want to kill it? Try using it for those extracurricular activities of Limud HaTorah. You'll thank me. Bye. Cheers. You waited for that. You were good. I love that.
So I'm going to elaborate on what Rabbi said. Elaborate on what I said.
You can embellish me.
We're in agreement here. But I'll tell you a story. I was once on a different time, and it was in Los Angeles. And I know some of those people in Los Angeles, they asked somebody, where's Sammy back there? Those provocative questions. I like to get under your skin. Problem was, I was the only person on the panel, and I couldn't dodge the question. It was a panel of one. And the problem was, it was Parshas Vayetze. So what does every provocative Los Angeles person want to know from the rabbi in Parshas Vayetze? Rabbi, tell me, did Yaakov kiss Rachel? So here I'm stuck. Because if I say he didn't, I'm a liar. If I say he did, then why can't single men kiss single women in today's world? Pasuk says he kissed her. So I answered as follows. You have to understand that there have been three periods in Jewish history so far. There's the period before Har Sinai, which Reb Lachman described so clearly before. That was called the period of the Yesharim. They didn't have Torah, they didn't have Halacha, they didn't have Beis HaMikdash, they didn't have Karbanos. They only had one thing, Yashrus. Anyone know what Sefer Bereishis is called? Sefer HaYesharim. That's how they discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu, exactly as Reb Lachman said before. They weren't so pious, they weren't so from, they didn't have such big matzah and such green marah, and such long lulav, such long tzitzis. They were Yesharim. They never made compromises, had to be easygoing, had to be forgiving, had to be soft, had to be compassionate. They were Yesharim. And that was for the first 2,500 years of history, because Har Sinai is 2448. Then the next about 1,000 years, I'm rounding things off, is a period of Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash Rishon, Mishkan Shiloh, Korbanos, Nevuah, Giloy Shechina, Nisim and Beis HaMikdash. And the last 2,000 years has been the third period. No Beis HaMikdash, no Nevuah, very little Giloy Shechina. When there is, it's hard to discern. And that period is the period of the Rabbanim. We're here because of Chazal. That's why we're here now. And I told that person, you're right, you have to be sensitive. As a Jew living in 2005, you have to be sensitive to all three periods. Some people forget the fact that there was a time when not everyone walked around with a big black hat. Avram didn't wear a big black hat. He didn't learn Tzelsim. He did some other things. You have to be sensitive to the Avos. Hopefully this summer, you're living in Eretz Yisrael. You're feeling the land that the Avos were dedicated to, sacrificed for, cried when they had to leave. And you're realizing it's not just some hot, dusty country out in the Middle East that you read about terror attacks. It's a place you want to call your own because it's the land of the Avos. And some of you were in Maris and Machpel, and some of you in Chevron, and so you're all at the Kotel, and you're all in Yerushalayim, and it's the land of the Avos. And you have to think about the Beis HaMikdash and the Korbanos, and as Reb Lachman said, the Nevi'im and Yirmiyah's message and Yeshayah's message. So you're right, Yaakov maybe kissed Rachel Taka, but then the Rabbanim came along and told us you shouldn't kiss single women, even if it's not sexual overtones. I'm sure there are no sexual overtones. So the Rabbanim made a Takana. So you're right, maybe something that was appropriate 3,000 years ago is not appropriate today. Because you can't just compare people in a vacuum. The point of that story is not to tell you about whether Yaakov kissed or didn't kiss Rachel, whether we should. The point of the story is the Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin says HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a bris with Am Yisrael. About which part of Torah? About Torah Sheba'al Peh. Lo karas HaKadosh Baruch Hu bris in Yisrael, ela al Torah Sheba'al Peh. Shenemar al pi ha-dvar ma'ila karas yitcha bris. Why? Why is there a bris about Torah Sheba'al Peh, not a bris about Tanakh? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that we would live for 2,000 years without the same currency, without the same language, without the same flag, without the same climate, without the same time zone, without the same eating habits, without the same skin color, Ruby, without the same dialect. Come on, let's hear it for Ruby. It's the same dialect, crazy dialect. We can barely understand each other. But no matter where a Yid lives,
He can live in Brooklyn, he can live in Har Nof, he can live in Alon Shavuot, he can live in Orange, he can even live in London. Shabbos is Shabbos, and matzah is matzah, and tefillin is black, and lulav is green, and Chazal carefully gave us that secret language that a Yid needs to know. You can't be a Yid and live on a mountain somewhere in the middle of Montana. A Yid needs kashrus, and a Yid needs tefillah, and a Yid needs mikvah, and Shabbos, and minyanim. You have to live with people, and that's our common language. And that's what we're committed. Rav Lachman was telling me before about the importance of Tanakh. So I don't know how many Svarim of Tanakh you know, but the second pasuk in Shir HaShirim, one of the greatest poem ever written. Ki tovim dodecha miyayim. Dodecha means the female body part, but Chazal Darshan, it means something else. Your uncles are better than HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wine. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah is the wine. Who are our uncles? You know who our uncles are? Rav Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yishmael, Shimon Gamliel, Yudan Nasi, Rav Ashi, Chia, Rav Chizda, Rav Nachman, Rav Papa, Mar Bar Zutra. These are our uncles. They kept us alive. That's the Brits. You want to stay alive? 2,000 years, you're not going to have the same flag, same country, same people, same language. Remember, I was once on a plane. I'm sure Rav Lachman has even better plane stories. I take off from Newark, and I'm supposed to land in Toronto. Matzei Shabbos, last flight out. This was a few years ago. I remember during the swine flu epidemic. So when you're the swine flu, you're not allowed to touch anyone. You're not allowed to sit next to anyone. You're not allowed to talk to anyone. You're not even allowed to look at anyone. That's how terrified people were. So everyone got on the plane. They're moving through. Excuse me, not looking at anyone. Total silence on the flight. And I see these three bachrim in the front of the plane, you know, with the hats on, trying to hide their Judaism. You can tell their faces, the accountant faces, the accountant glasses. They're sitting in the front with their ski gear. So the flight lands in Toronto late at night, 2 in the morning. No one said a word to anyone on that flight. It was swine flu, Tinus Debord. No one could talk. It was usher. You talk, you were kicked off the flight. God forbid you may spread it. Then when we landed, all of a sudden, we all pulled out our phones, and I went over, okay, you need a number for a minion, you need a number for kosher food, you need a place to stay, here's a place at kosher bakery, and everyone in the flight was looking, do you guys know each other? You didn't say a word to, like, you guys, no one else on the flight was talking, all of us knew each other, but we're all Yidden. We have to team up, we have to share information. How are you going to get to where you're going? Davening's at 8, Mantfila's at 8:40, Shemon Kriyashma's at 8:40, Mantfila's at 9:30, make sure you make it. That's the magic of Torah Shabbat Peh. That's the magic of Gemara. That's the bris. And that's precisely what's under assault today. Chazal are under assault today. People don't understand Gemara because it's difficult. And Tanakh, as Rav Lachman said, is easy and fascinating and entertaining stories. And a lot of what Chazal said are abrasive to the modern ear. Some of the things they said about Goyim and the things they said about women and some of those things are hard for people to reconcile with modern. If you give up Chazal, you're giving up on Halacha, you're giving up on Jewish survival. Who's going to save Gemara? Who's going to teach Gemara? How many of you in this room are going to save Gemara from the modern vandalism, the spray painting that's going on, the disgust that people have with Chazal? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Rav Lachman said Torah Shebichtav universal messages of ethics and monotheism. And that was intended for a world audience, and it indeed was accepted by a world audience, and as Rav Lachman said, it was perverted by a world audience. That's why Yidden pulled back, because the Christians took it and made it sound Christian, and the Muslims took it and made it sound Muslim, and you know, we said, you know what, we don't want to get into the battle, because anytime we get into the battle, the conclusion is already foregone, so why even battle? And you're allowed to teach a guy Torah Shebichtav, because it has universal messages. You know what happens if you teach a guy Torah Shebichtav? Violate an Isser. It's us that the Gemara Merikon says. It's us that teach a guy Torah Shabbat Peh. Because that's our secret language. Everyone in this room has a little secret handshake. And you have that secret handshake with every single Jew and certainly every single Orthodox Jew. On Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah's Chal on Shabbos. Do we blow shofar? No, what's the answer? Do we blow shofar? Why not? Because Rabbah made a takana. Anyone know Rabbah's takana? You can't blow shofar on Shabbos because maybe you'll carry 4 almas in Rosh Hashanah. Guys, that's crazy. That's asinine. That's stupid. Every community today has an Erev. Every shul has experts. They're not going to carry the shofar anywhere. But Chazal spoke. And we listened. Because without Chazal, we wouldn't be here. And I can promise you, when Mashiach reconvenes a Beis Din, you know the first takana he's going to repeal? That takana. And you know the second takana Mashiach's going to repeal? Kitnius. I promise you. Probably Kitnius first, depending upon if he's Ashkenazi or Sephardi. The Sephardi won't bother him that much. But that's why we're here. That's what Orthodoxy is. That's what it is, guys. 4 points to being Orthodox. You believe in these four, you're Orthodox. You don't, you're not. Divinity of Torah Shebichsav, authority of Chazal to interpret it, 13 principles of theology, more or less Rambam, and 4, that history is ending towards a redemption, and it's not just incidental, but it's closed. And there's a fixed point at the end. And it's that point that drives so many people batty today. So many people have a hard time with Chazal. The language is so hard. The concepts are so foreign. Why can't they study stories about the prophets and think about God and life and the meaning of life and the meaning of God and the meaning of life in God and the meaning of God in life? Rather than, so who's going to be the person that's going to get up one day and be able to articulate Chazal and make people fall in love with them like you love your uncle who really cares about you? So Chazal, your uncle. And that's why specifically at this time, Reb Lachman talked about his children. We both teach a style that's roughly cool in different ways. I'm going to speak your name, the Brisker Alumnus. We're both into Iyun. My shita with my kids, I don't learn a stitch of Iyun with them until they're 14. I just force feed them as many block Gemara as I can. So they should know Gemara logic and know Gemara syntax, like you know Jet statistics and Yankee scores. Because when I say touchdown, you know exactly what it means. When I say touchdown to Ruby, say, give me the parish. Can you imagine if you knew Torah and Gemara logic that well? So that's why you have to learn so much Gemara. So it's not that we are in any way disparaging, in any way devaluing the others, but this is something that if you don't spend massive investments in, you're not going to succeed.
Are we diving live alone or are people joining?
Everybody's gonna come.
So they listen to the end of it.
This one by way of example. Say Ami is learning Gemara. Question is, to what extent can he be innovative and mechadesh in that time of learning while remaining loyal to Mesorah?
Enjoy.
I'll cut you a deal. 15 minutes, I'll speak for 7.5 minutes.
You do your thing.
7.5.
That's okay. I'll be your tail end. You're talking about Gemara specifically. Thank God you didn't ask about that.
Okay.
Look, all of Gemara is innovation. Tanakh is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's fixed, defined, immutable word. You can't change Tanakh. Without human beings, Gemara wouldn't exist. Remember the Gemara quarter before in Gittin? What's Torah Shebaal Peh called? It's called the Bris. One of the reasons it's called the Bris is because it's a deal Hashem made with us. You learn Gemara, you'll survive Golus. You don't learn, you won't survive. The second reason Gemara is called Bris, I'll give you a fancy word, all the SAT studiers, because Gemara is bilateral. Like every Bris, every covenant needs two people. A Shavua is unilateral. Hashem takes the Shavua. Bris is, let's do it together. So without Rabbi Akiva innovating, and without Hillel innovating, and without the Rambam innovating, without the Blachman's innovating, Tom innovating, Akiva Egg innovating. So the word innovation in Chiddush shouldn't frighten you. That's the problem. Too many people today, because a lot of innovation over the last 200 years has in some ways poisoned classic orthodoxy and classic Yiddishkeit. A lot of people associate innovation with something negative. The Chassam Sofer was a real conservative because he was fighting the battles against the Reformed and conservative, primarily conservative. He came out with a statement that I'm sure some of you heard, all of you one day will hear. Come on, Madrukhan John.
Chadash Aser Min HaTorah. So anything new is Aser. And that's why a lot of Frum Yidin, especially in Chutz La'aretz today, where they still feel that barrage and that siege mentality, they tend to be much more conservative, small c. Don't change anything. Don't change Minhag HaAvos. Don't try to be Mechadish anything. Let's just keep things going as they are, or else we're going to lose more than we bargained for. So you shouldn't be afraid of the word Chiddush, or innovation. Tara Shebal Peh is based on it. What your question is, Zach, is in 2012, I'm a high school student in TABC or MTA or DRS or wherever. Should I be reading Chiddushim of other people, or should I be trying to think of a new idea? I'm a yeshiva bachur in Keren B'Yavna. Should I be reading some other person's Torah, or should I be trying to think of a Chiddush? I'm a bachur in Yeshiva University or in the Mir, and there you saw it. Should I be reading someone else's Chiddushim? And the reason that question is asked is because there's been such an explosion of Torah in the last 100 years that maybe we shouldn't be reinventing the wheel. You know, many, you know the last Sefer that was published in Gemara and Bnei Brak? Happened 5 minutes ago. Wait, they just published another Sefer. Wait, there's another Sefer. There are more Svarim on Torah being published in Bnei Brak than Chinese children being born. Every 2.3 seconds. And it's a great time to live in the world of Torah. I asked Rav Schechter this question, and I asked Rav Lichtenstein this question. I said, would you agree that there's more Torah being studied in today's world than at any time since the first Beis HaMikdash? And they said, Avada, of course. Not necessarily the quality, but the spread of Torah? Are you kidding? NCSY Kolo? I'm not going to tell you what I did during my summers. I know Rav Lichtenstein said what he did during his summers. But we were not on NCSY Kolo. Far from it. I'm cracking up. Trust me. Not Kolel, not NCSY. Trust me. We didn't see a Sefer for 2 months. We're lucky. And here you are, sitting at NCSY Kolel. It's incredible. So the question is, there's so much Torah being Mishadesh today. You live two generations after Rav Soloveitchik, one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim of the last 200 years. So should you be sitting there in the corner thinking of your own Chiddush, or should you be reading his Chiddushim? Or reading the Stiglitz Chiddushim, or reading the Moshe Feinstein's Chiddushim, or reading Rebbe Yashin's Tzadik Levarach's Chiddushim? That's the question. Different people have different styles. Some people, let me tell you why my own personal style. You know why I'm more drawn towards a little bit of personal thinking, Zach? You'll never guess. You know why I don't read a lot of Chiddush Torah, but I think more of my own Chiddushim? I have really, 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 really bad eyesight. And it's really, really, really hard for me to read texts. And I work really, really hard, and my eyes really hurt me. And I can't read anymore, so I sit and think about things. And someone else has better eyesight, so they read more. It could be emotional, it could be psychological, it could be... So there's no one derech. Everyone has their own derech. But don't for a second be afraid of Chiddush, because without Chiddush, there'd be no Gemara, there'd be no Shas. Number two, and I'll give Rav Lachman 8 minutes to speak. Number two, Chiddush doesn't mean Iyum. You can also be a big Mechadish and Bekiyas. Chiddush just means creativity, not necessarily innovation. Innovation means I have a new idea. Creativity means I'm reading old ideas, but I'm comparing, as Rav Lachman said, I'm cataloging this Gemara that I read in Bava Basra, which are the Gemara is it most like? Where else does the Gemara appear? How did this Gemara speak? How did that? That's not Iyum. I'm not creating any new Chiddushim. Anytime you catalog and access, anyone into computers, when you build a database, it takes a lot of Chachma. How to build a database? How to build the Excel? What are the columns? What are the rows? How are you going to store information? How are you going to remember them? Mnemonics? So the second people today say innovation, right away, that means learning Iyum and not learning Bekiyas. And if I'm learning Bekiyas, I'm brain dead. I'm just reading. Learning Bekiyas doesn't mean to go brain dead. Learning Bekiyas means to sit and think and not read every single Rishon, but just to try to put together and cover as much ground and store and catalog and organize and align the information without going down, without drilling like an oil drill. You're just covering the terrain. Number three, the importance of acting creatively, as Rav Lachman alluded to before, you say it every week in Davening, you're going to say it in Mirat Hashem in about 72, 96 hours, the same Chalkeinu B'Sar HaSecha. Any Torah that's your Mechadesh is yours. And it touches a level of your heart and your neshama
that acquired Torah can barely penetrate, because it's yours, it's your neshama. You fought for it, you worked for it, you developed it, whatever it is. The struggle yields internalization. If you struggle for something, it will shape your personality. If it's easy come, it will skim the surface. And that's what Rabbi Akiva said when he saw the rock being shaped by the water. Everyone knows the story, but you don't know his actual language. He made a kal v'chomer, umar rach posulas akosha, something soft sculpts rock, water is soft, and it sculpts rock that's hard. Torah shekasha kibarzel. Torah is more difficult and more of a struggle than anything. Alachas kam v'kama sheyifsa libo shel adam. So the issue is not innovation, the issue is struggle and work. Because the more you work, the more it will shape your heart. It's not really a question of how much you innovate, but are you trying to really work at something? Innovation, acquiring. I'm going to let Rabbi Bachman finish on.
Thank you. I'd like to just define the word chiddush. The pasuk says, "Ein kol chodesh tachas haShemesh." There's nothing new in reality. And Chazal say, "Malam na Hashemesh yesh chodesh." Beyond creation, there is things that are new. Meaning to say, Chidush Torah. Rashi there says, "What do you mean? Is there such a thing as innovative thinking?" Rashi says it's like a suckling, a small child, breastfeeding from his mother. More he touches the breast of his mother, he feels different flavors in that nourishment. Also divrei Torah. The more you touch it, feel it. Hold it in your hand. You have your own personal flavor. Chaim of Elazhin writes, Chidushei Torah Nikra. What is Chidushei Torah? Kol ma shelomed yoter umidbarim advarim mechuvarim etzlo. It simply means clarity. It simply means not just knowing the words, not just, as you said very nicely, just covering the terrain, but what do they really mean? What does every word mean? What does every question represent? The thinking, the logic. Chidush Torah doesn't mean you creating your own. Chidush Torah means you understanding the old in your way. Two chidushim. Look at the Rishonim. Kigdoyle Rabbi Seinu Achreinim. Primarily the Rishonim. They spent their lives trying to understand the thought process of the Tanoim Amiron. Every word was worth gold. There's a beautiful lashon of the Baal HaTanya. Finally, talk some chassidus in Likutei Torah, Parshas Sav. He says, "What is the greatest way of getting close to God?" He says, "It's not through davening, not through tehillim, not through learning Kabbalah." He actually points out there are very few chachmei agadita in the Gemara. One, Reb Pinchas ben Yair, was a big Musarnik. Rabbi Akiva tried to do a little agada. Woo! Did he get it? The ikur dveikus ba'akadosh baruch hu hu lahavin et ha-sugya al burya mikol tzad u'mikol pina. That's a quotation. Clarity. Really understanding what these people are saying, what they mean. As I said before, not just hearing the words, listening to the music. Yes, that's chidushim. Yes, we must always try to do that. But we must always have humility. We always have to understand that these tanoim, these amoraim, these daily rabbisen arishayim had an eagle's view of the mass of the material. Do you understand when the Rama writes Yira'el Li, I think, means in his mind he rolled through Shas. There's a Sefer Shilas David Reb David Friedman Mikarlin was a Gdoli Gdoli Hadiris. Doesn't mention any Achronim at all. Honestly, believe me, that's my sheet. You're good. I don't have problems with eyes. I just don't. my students will attest to that. Reb Chaim doesn't get mentioned by me, would you believe it? I'm still stuck with the Rashba. He writes, I'm sorry that I just took so much time that every svara I said, I had to make sure it fit with Bavli Yerushalmi Sifrasi from Mechilta. That how, you think I'm going to have time to check out the Latter-day Saints? So, we're not Reb David Kalina, but let's learn with humility. We talk about young people wanting to be innovative and creative. Yes, you must find your flavor. And that means thinking. It means if you have something to say, say it. But think with humility. Remember you're talking about the Rajba. Remember you're talking about the Ramban. You're talking about people which their muskel rishon, their basic intuitive first thought when they saw an idea, its background was a total command of Kol HaTorah Kula. That's what it means. Understand who you're talking about. Just saying, I must end with the story of Meyer. Moshe was talking about he doesn't have time for Achronim. You don't have to be apologetic. I'll tell you a story. I think it's very important to know Gedolei Rebbe Sein Achronim, and Moshe will agree. I mean, how do you not look twice to see this in a Kiveger? I mean, you should have finished that by your bar mitzvah, as far as I'm concerned. But I'll tell you a story. I was a young boy. I had left America. I actually turned 15 already here in this country in Yeshivat Hebron. And the first Masechta I learned there was Yevamos. Okay, Yevamos, not bad. Okay. In those days, we had Bechinos in Hebron Yeshiva. And one of the Rashi Yeshiva was Reb Moshe Chevroni. He was a very big Talmud Chacham. This was a person I can test it honestly. You couldn't catch him at a Rashi and Shas with its Lashon. He was frightening, actually frightening. Messiah Chafitumah, he said, with the Rashi, it doesn't pay base. It made nothing like it. It just like rolled out. This guy knew it. So, we went up to his house and he was giving us questions. Now, before we went up, we knew there were certain guys who were a bit weaker in the group. And we felt it was wrong that he should ask them questions, they would be embarrassed in public. So five of us got together and said, listen, whenever he touches someone which is a bit weak, we'll gang up on the question on the Rosh Hashiva and we'll throw the answer ourselves. We'll mix them up. We're still good friends, these fellows. So we call the little shkotzim. We were all, So all of a sudden one guy made a mistake. He asked a question and one of us says, Rabbi Chanan Freg de Kasha. That's a certain very profound Rosh Hashiva, Zechayim Levracha, and Wasserman, what?
Your
friend. What? Oh, he asked this question. So the certain very profound Rosh Hashiva, Zechayim Levracha, asked this question. If Moshe got green, he suddenly looked and he glared. And I'll tell you, he said it in Yiddish, I'll say it in English. He says, young man, your head is like a closet. It has finite space. You will clutter it up with other people's minds. You will never have place for your own. That's my answer. Shame to my sir.
How to go on Yiddish?
Hop sa shaf. Hop sa shaf. Hop sa shaf.